Okay, everybody, good Erev Shabbos. Welcome to our Erev Shabbos, three ideas in 30 minutes. Here we go. First of all, I want to thank our sponsors for this evening, Rena and Steve Rance, who are sponsoring in memory of her parents, Anna and Harry Plitch. Their neshamas should have an aliyah. We're very grateful for their sponsorship. And also, our learning, as always, is an aliyah for the neshama of Esther T. Labas Gabriel Pinchas. And I want to dedicate our learning tonight to Raymond Sauer. His neshama should have an aliyah. He obviously is a mainstay here on Thursday nights, and we are going to miss, we already miss him, and we are going to miss him every Thursday night going forward, so our learning should be for an aliyah for his neshama. Can someone get me a chumash at some point? Okay, so obviously Eretz Yisrael is very much, Eretz Yisrael is very much on our minds, and so I want to start our first idea with an idea that's from Eretz Yisrael. Now, I referenced part of this in a minchamar of the other night, but I think only Stephen was there. So I'm going to review part of it, and then I'll introduce a new idea as well. When Moshe Rabbeinu sends the Jewish people, when he sends the Meraglim on their spying mission, again, what that looked like, was it a real spying mission, what went wrong, these are all questions we've dealt with in the past. And then when Moshe Rabbeinu tells them and gives them their instructions, he says that you're supposed to go to the land of Israel, and you're supposed to see Uriisem es haaretz mahi. You're supposed to see the land. What is it? Vesama yosheva lechazak hu arafe. And you're supposed to look at the people. Are they strong or are they weak? Hamaat im hurav. Are they big or are they small? Asks Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap in his Meimarom. What does this mean when the Torah tells, when Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Meraglim, Uriisem es haaretz mahi? They have to look at the land. What does it look like? Isn't that an obvious answer? Now, if I tell you to go into our social hall and look at the social hall and tell me what does it look like, that's somewhat obvious. In other words, you don't need anyone with chachma, you don't need anyone with profound wisdom to be able to go and to tell me what a place looks like. Anyone who has half a brain can go in and tell me what it looks like. So why did I need these fancy razzle-dazzle meraglim, as we're going to learn in a second, in a later Dvar Torah? We're going to talk about that they were anashim, shlach lecha anashim, and Rashi says that anashim is language of chashivas, that these were chashiva people. So why do I need chashiva people to go to Eretz Yisrael and to tell me, Uriisem es haaretz mahi? You're going to look in the land, you're going to tell me, what is it? Isn't it obvious? You don't need a PhD in topography to tell me what the land is. Isn't that obvious? Says Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap, in his Meimarom on Parshas Lech Lecha, an unbelievable vort, which directly ties in this week's Parsha. He says, in Parshas Lech Lecha, when Avram Avinu is told to leave his land and to go to Eretz Yisrael, we know the language is Lech Lecha me'artzecha me'latecha me'vesavicha el ha'aretz asher ar'eka, to the land that I will show you. Secret, the word Yerushalayim does not appear anywhere in the Torah. This is not the only place that Hashem says to the land that I will show you. It's this mysterious, amorphous land. Why not just say, go to Yerushalayim? Nowhere does Hashem say in the five books of Moshe, go to Yerushalayim. It's always, El Aretz Asher Areka, to the land that I'm going to tell you about. Why the big secret? Why not just reveal to Avram Avinu that you're going to Eretz Yisrael? Why keep him guessing the whole way? Says Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap, such an unbelievable word. He says, Ki afal pi shalamar e'einayim, nidme ki Eretz Yisrael hi Eretz kechol shar haaretzos. Even though Eretz Yisrael looks like every other land. If you go to Israel, it looks like Jordan, it can look like Egypt, it can look like Lebanon, it can look like Syria, it can look like Saudi Arabia, it can look like any other Middle Eastern country. If you look on a superficial level, the land of Israel is like any other land. It's got high-tech nation, we could go through everything that, certainly now, and all the amenities we have here, you can get in Eretz Yisrael. From a superficial perspective, Eretz Yisrael, says Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap, is kechol haaretzos. It looks like every other land. But be'emes lokenu. But we know that's not the case. Because we know ki eres acheres hi legamri. That it's completely different. That while superficially, it might look like other lands, but there's an inherent kedusha, there's an inherent holiness that's embedded in every single stone and every single footstep of Eretz Yisrael. And so on a superficial level, it's rocks, it's stones, it's streets, it's everything that it's everywhere else. But yet that's not the case. It's an acheres hi legamri. It's a totally different land. Ve'ha'otros humachmadim hi bekirba einum gluyin l'shum adam. And what makes Eretz Yisrael so unique and special is invisible to everybody. You could have people go to Eretz Yisrael and they can experience it like any other land in the world. But if you want to experience the depth in the Kedusha, in the Pnimius, the inner workings of Eretz Yisrael, so you have to be willing to look a little bit different. You have to be willing to look a little bit different. And therefore he writes, V'al kein amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Avram. And this is why Hashem told Avram, Lech lecha el ha'aretz asher eka. Go to the land that I'm going to show you. Hainu she'telech la'aretz kazos, she'lo tuchal l'rosa be'atzmecha. It's a land that on your own, you're not going to necessarily be able to appreciate the full Kedusha and the full spiritual beauty of the land of Israel. Ela ani ere'e oschalach. I'm going to have to show it to you. I'm going to have to reveal it to you. I'm going to have to tell you that these stones aren't like the stones of Jordan. And they're not like the stones of Syria. And they're not like the stones of Lebanon. And they're not like the stones of Boca Raton. They are categorically different stones. And so you could go to Eretz Yisrael and you could see a plain and they have the restaurants and they have the coffee shops and they have the shopping and they have all, and you could experience it like a secular experience. But Hashem says you got to be willing to look underneath the surface. It's Ela Arts Asher Areka. I'm telling you, Hashem says, there's more than meets the eye when it comes to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore he says, based on our Parsha, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the Meraglim. Ureisem es haaretz mahi. What is the land? He wasn't asking, tell me, what malls do they have? And what is the airport looking like? And what's the shopping like? And what's the coffee situation like? And what are the wine situation? That's not what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to know. He wanted to know mahi. Like, tell me, underneath the surface, what does it feel like to be in Eretz Yisrael? What's the Kedusha? How much sanctity is infused in every footstep, and in every fruit, and in every vegetable, and in every grain? Ureisem es haaretz mahi. I need you, Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu says, to look beneath the surface and to recognize the Kedusha that is infused within every foot of Eretz Yisrael, because it's not like a land like everywhere else. It's categorically different than everywhere else. Last summer I was in Eretz Yisrael. I was staying in a place, and I was talking to someone, and the person said to me, they said, you know, why do you Americans come here? They're like, I just want to get to America. Why do you guys come to Yerushalayim? It's like America, but minus. Like, we try to be everything in America, but we're worse than America. That's what one of the women in the hotel was trying to tell me. And I thought to myself, I'm like, you're missing the point. Yeah, on a superficial, secular level, you're right, I get it. It's not as convenient. The amenities might be a little bit different. But underneath the surface, if you allow your eyes to look a little bit deeper, how much Kedusha, how much sanctity, how much spirituality can be found there? And so says Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalap, that was what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. Ureisim es haaretz mahi. When you go to Eretz Yisrael, you have to do me a favor. He's basically telling generations, don't just look at the airport, and don't just look at the malls, and don't just look at the shopping, and don't just look at the food. But mahi, like what are you really there for? What are you really experiencing? And what Kedusha is really infused in every single stone and in every single step? And with that as the background, if you turn the page, I want to share with you, I shared at Mincha Maariv the other night, a comment by the tour. You can take food if you want. A comment by the tour. And I'm sorry it wasn't marked. It got photocopied before I had a chance to mark it. But if you look on where it says page 205 on the left-hand side. So the tour writes that we say in our Ala Michia, V'nochal mipirya v'nispoa mituva, that in our Ala Michia, which is the bracha we make after eating one of the grains, after eating one of the certain fruits, right, the seven fruits of the land of Israel. So we make an Ala Michia. And in there we say, we thank Hashem, v'nochal mipirya v'nispoa mituva. We thank Hashem for allowing us to eat the fruits of Eretz Yisrael. Says the tour, v'ein la'omro. Don't say those words. She'ein lachmod ha'aretz b'shvil piriyah v'tova. We shouldn't want to go to Israel because it's got the best fruit, because it's got the best wines, because it's got the best vegetables, because the shuk has the best. I mean, I like the dates and the, but that probably makes me different than everybody else here who probably goes to the shuk for other reasons, right? But that's not why we should go to Eretz Yisrael. El l'kaima mitzvos tuleis ba'aretz. We go to Eretz Yisrael because there are mitzvos that you can fulfill in Eretz Yisrael that you can't fulfill everyone else. So the Torah says, take it out. Take out the words, v'nochal mipirya v'nispo mituva. What are we thinking, Hashem, for Eretz Yisrael? Because it's got delicious fruits? Because when you go to the restaurants, the fruits are and vegetables are fresher than they are in America? What a pedestrian, superficial reason to thank Hashem for the land of Israel. That's the Torah's kasha on the bracha that we make every single day. And therefore he says, take it out. Take out those words. It's almost insulting to Hashem that you gave us this land and the only thing I can thank you for is, it's got some pretty delicious dates in the shuk. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. Comes along the Bach, Rav Yoel Sirkis in his commentary on the Torah, and he defends the language that we have in our Olam Mechia. And he says, Tema, I understand you, Mr. Tur. Why are you asking this kasha? Halo kedusha sa'aretz hanishbas hi ba mikedusha sa'aretz helyona hi nishbat gam beperoseh sheyonkim mikedusha sa'shchina. You think that the cucumber you get in Israel is the same cucumber you're going to get in Publix? The cucumber might look the same on a superficial level, says the Bach. But do you know where the roots of that cucumber came from? Do you know what nurtured and nourished that cucumber? It was what he says, Sheyonkim mekedushas hashchina. The ground of Israel is infused with holiness, with the Shechina itself. And so when you eat a cucumber for Eretz Yisrael, says the Bach, you're not just eating a cucumber. You are infusing yourself. You are imbibing. You're eating the Shechina. You're eating holiness. You're eating sanctification. And therefore he says in the bold, Ki ba'achila peroseh, when you eat fruit from Eretz Yisrael, when you eat grains from Eretz Yisrael, and wine from Eretz Yisrael, and the vegetables of Eretz Yisrael, anu nizoni mikdushas hashchina umitarasa. You're eating spirituality. You're eating spirituality. It's categorically different. And so on a superficial level, yes, your cucumber here is the same as the cucumber there. And we can debate better or worse. The bottle of wine you get from California, I'm going to make a lot of enemies with this one, Gabe Lasser, I hope you're not listening to this. The bottle of wine you get from California looks on the outside like the bottle of wine you're going to get from Eretz Yisrael. Says the Bach, it's wrong. Because if you're willing to look, what is the land really? It's not just a physical space. It's not just like we needed a physical homeland and plop. No, there's a kedusha to it. And so categorically, it's a different cucumber. It's a different bottle of wine. It's a different tomato. It's a different date. It's a different loaf of bread. Why? Because again, these are his words, not mine. Sheyonki mikedusha sashchina. It's yonek. It's eating off of the ground. It's nursing, thank you, from the kedusha of the shechina. What an amazing idea. And that's exactly what Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap says in our parsha this week. Uriyisem es aras mahi. You have to look beneath the surface. That it's not just a physical land, but there's more to it. And the fruit of the land, and the produce of the land, and the wine of the land, it's not the wine you're going to get here, but it's Yon Ki Mikdusha Sashchina. You are eating, you are imbibing, you're taking in the Kedusha of the Shechina itself. And I love this idea because it reminds us. It reminds us of what we're fighting for. It reminds us of what we love to visit. It reminds us why we go there. It reminds us why when you go to Eretz Yisrael, you feel different and you experience Judaism different. I always compare it to, you know, like a television. So there's like the old televisions, which were like black and white. Then there was like televisions where it got like blurry, and if you hit it properly, like you can maybe catch a little bit of the image, right? And then there's like our televisions, and then there's like 3D, and then there's 4D, and that, right? So like Judaism here is like black and white. It's black and white. Like, you see it, but you're not getting the whole experience. When you go to Eretz Yisrael, it's like 3D, high definition. I don't know. Are we up to 4D, 5D? I don't even know. I don't know, right? 5D, high definition, where, like, you feel like you're in it. It's a different experience, right? It's not just a land. It's not just a trip. It's not just a vacation. It's not just a nice hotel. It's not just a bottle of wine. It's not just a nice experience in the shuk. It's not just a gift, right? It's more than that. It's a reminder of what Eretz Yisrael really, truly is, Sheyonki Mikdusha Sashchina, that you're taking part of the Shechina with you. And that's what our parsha says when Moshe Rabbeinu sends the Meraglim, or Isim Es Aretz Mahi, I want you to see what the land really is. It's not just a physical land, but it represents so much more. That is idea number one. I went a little over time, but you guys know hopefully by now, we've been doing this a lot of years, when I talk about Eretz Yisrael, so I get a little passionate and excited. Okay.
Very sure we gave a shiur after Oman Shmuy about 2 or 3 years ago or something like that. You can bring up a Rashi that indicates that the Bracha Subvention, the Ikkar of the Bracha Subvention, are Eretz Yisrael. necessarily.
So that would fit this idea. This perfect idea also. Perfect. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Okay, idea number two comes from the Emes Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Also a beautiful idea. So we say in the Parsha, when Moshe Rabbeinu sends the Meraglim, it says, Shlach Lecha Anashim. They used to send the Anashim. It refers to them as people. Zucked Rashi. Rashi says, Kol Anashim Shebemikra Lashon Chashivas. That any time we use the word Anashim in the Torah, it is a language of Chashivas. Now the problem is that we know that that's not the case. We know that's not the case. For example, if you go a little bit later in the Parsha, when the Meraglim when Kalev is shouting down the Meraglim, it says, Ve'ha'anashim asher alu imo. It once again refers to the Meraglim as the Anashim. And over there, we are much less flattering of them. Over there, we are much less flattering of them. There, they are not good people, but rather, already over there, they've made the mistake. They are the Meraglim, right? So how do you say that the Anashim is a language of Chashivas? We know it's not a language of importance. So how do you understand this Rashi? Says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, page number 3, something so beautiful. And I'll tell it to you outside, and then we'll say it in English, inside. In most languages, the plural for person, right? Person is one person. The plural for person is people. It is not persons, right? I mean, nowadays with woke culture, maybe it is, right? But there's person, which is one individual. But the plural of person is not persons. It is people. It is an entirely different word altogether. Similarly, says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, in Hebrew, the word for a person is ish. The word for people is not ishim, but rather it is anashim. Ask Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky a very simple question. Why is that the case? If I tell you that I have a ball, and then I tell you I have multiple balls, I could tell you I have a bat. If I have two bats, it is bats. In every other word, all you have to do is add an S on in the English language, and it turns it from singular to plural, with the exception of person. Person does not become persons when it's plural. It becomes a new name. It is now people. Similarly, in the Hebrew language, ish does not just become ishim, which would be the natural thing that I would think it would be, but rather it transforms into an entirely different word of anashim. It's an entirely new word. Ask Yaakov Kamenetsky why. Such a great question. I never thought about that. He claims it's in other languages as well. I'm sure there's someone here or online who's a linguist who's going to tell me that in French or Spanish, maybe my mother in Greek and Latin. Yeah, long story, right? But you know, maybe, I don't know, there's other languages as well. But that's the question that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky asks. And he answers the following. If you look on page number 3, the left-hand side, top column, he says, Ve'atam bazeh, the reason it becomes an entirely new different word, humibnei shekibut shel anashim harbe, when you have a group of people, einot siruf shel harbe yechidim, our shir right now is not 30, 40 people, just individuals who happen to be in a room learning, but when we come together, we become a different unit altogether. Instead of 40 people learning on their own, we now become a shir. We become a chabura. So by us joining together, we've actually transformed ourselves. It's not just 1 + 2 + 3 + 1, right? But rather, we are now a group of people. We've changed the essence of who we are. We are not 40 individuals sitting in a room, but rather we are a group of people united in a common purpose. He says that's what's happening here. Mimnei shekibut shel anashim, when people come together, einot siruf shel harbe yechidim. It's not 1 + 1 + 1 + 1. It's not just a bunch of individuals who happen to be in a room. Ela hu legamri shem chadash ve'inin chadash. That when you have a group of people that come together, it becomes a new entity altogether. It's not just a group of individuals combined, but rather you form a new identity, which is such a beautiful idea. It means that when you come to Minyan, it's not just 10 individuals, but you've transformed yourself into a new identity called a minyan. When you come to the Boker Tzion Synagogue, we're not just 1,000 family members that just happen to be individual. You've transformed yourself as part of a tzibur. You're part of a community. So you're not just a bunch of individuals who happen to daven in the same minyan, but you transform yourself into a new entity. To say it differently, the whole is greater than the sum of the individual parts. So if we together might be 40, whatever number people, we're not just 40 people. Our power far exceeds the strength of us as individuals because we've now formed a new identity. So we're not just individuals anymore, right? We say this by weddings. When two people get married, it's not just 1 + 1 = 2. It's 1 + 1 = much more than 2 because the whole of the marriage is much greater than the sum of the individual parts. Two people are able to accomplish so much more married than they, right? So that's exactly what's happening here. He says, "Eino tziruf shel harbe yechidim." It's not just a bunch of individuals together, but rather it's a shem chadash ve'inin chadash. You've transformed yourself into a new entity. Therefore, says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, now we understand the confusion in our parsha. Because Rashi says that anashim is a language of chashivas. It's a language of importance. And the truth is that Rashi is right. Because when you have a group of people that come together, so great things can happen. When a community is unified, when a community comes together, so great things can happen. We can accomplish great things, and we can take care of the poor and the indigent and the widow, right? We can do amazing things. But what happened? No, please don't touch that. But what happens if you misuse that? So Yoshua, the Gemara describes, the Targum Yonasan says that the reason why he needed a special bracha is because of Anvasanuso, because he was too humble. He was too humble. And Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that the power of a group can go both ways. The power of a group can be used for good, and the power of a group can be used in a negative fashion. The Meraglim took the power of a group, and they misused it. They abused it. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu was so worried about Yoshua, because to combat the power of a group is insurmountable. In other words, Yoshua against individuals, he could be fine. But when the Anashim, when this group of Meraglim come together, then it's very dangerous. And so the Meraglim took this koach, this power of a group that we just spoke about, and they misused it. And that's how you explain that they're both Shlach Lecha Anashim. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, guys, I'm warning you that when you go somewhere as a group, there's enormous chashivas, there's enormous power. The Meraglim took that and they abused it. They used it for nefarious purposes. They used it to speak Lashon Hara about the land of Israel. And that's where everything went wrong. But says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, there's a more fundamental idea here. And it's a reminder about the power of unity, the power of community, the power of a tzibur. To remind yourself that you're not just 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 + 1, but you form a new entity called a community. And there's an enormous power in what you can accomplish. That is Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky on Shlach Lecha Anashim. Why is Anashim? Why is it not Ishim? Ish, Ishim? The answer is because when you go from a singular to a plural, it becomes a new entity altogether. That is idea number two. Idea number three comes from a beautiful, beautiful idea from Rav Binyamin Eisenberg. And you have it here on page number, I don't know, because I didn't number the pages. Okay? We have in our Haftorah, we always like to reference the Haftorah when we can. So we know that even though the Meraglim in our Parsha become a disaster, so Yoshua makes, quote unquote, the same mistake in Sefer Yoshua as well. The Yoshua sends spies, that's going to be our Haftorah. He sends spies across into Yericho, to spy out the land, and of course that ends up really successfully. Where do the spies go? So we know they come into Yericho, and who do they stay by? None other than Rachav. They stay by Rachav. Okay, and the Gemara tells us already, Rashi tells us on the Pasuk over there, that Rachav, so she was not such a good person, right, to start off, okay, and she did inappropriate things, promiscuous, perhaps, licentious behavior, okay, and she used to live on the wall of the city. And the way she used to do it is that on the back of the window, she used to have a rope. And when the guys needed to sneak out in the morning or in the middle of the night, so they would go out the window down the rope. Fast forward, now the Meraglim come and they stay in Rachav's house. And they need to escape when the people of Yericho are coming to get them. And so Rachav says, oh, I got the back door. Oh, I have a great story about this, but I can't. When the recording goes off, right? So I have a really good story about this. Okay? So Rachav says, okay, so I have a window, I have a rope, you'll go take it. And the Rashi already over there quotes that in the Zchus that Rachav used what she used to use for sin, now she used for a miracle, so she gets rewarded for that. Ask Rabbi Binyamin Eisenberger in this beautiful Sefer Mesilos Bilvavam, what is the significance of a window and a rope? Why are those two things singled out to represent Rachav's tshuva? Again, Rachav is a harlot. All of a sudden, she becomes the hero of our story. And what does she use? She uses the window and the rope. What is significant about the window and the rope? Says Rabbi Binyamin Eisenberger, the most beautiful idea. He says a window. He says, Merames. Do you have underlines there?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Merames. Lamasha kasa bisfarim, eitza tova bishas nisayon chasa shalom. Let's say a person is facing a test. How do you overcome that test? Right? So when we talk about a test, we'll use words in the English language like, I feel like the walls are closing in around me. Or we'll say to ourselves, I feel stuck in my situation. Okay? Says Rabbi Yehuda Eisenberger, Shiyatayir la'atzma, when you feel like that, you have to imagine, kilu nimsa sagur b'chader hasasim, picture yourself in a completely closed off room, aval yesh chalon echara pasuach lervacha, but there's one window, there's one escape route, efshar latzeis v'livroach, whatever it is you feel stuck in, whenever you feel the walls are closing in on you, always picture that there's one window, because he writes, there's always that window, there's always an opportunity to exit. There's always an opportunity to change. There's always an opportunity to fix the situation you are in. And therefore, he says, that's the imagery of the window. The imagery of the window is a reminder to us that no matter how stuck you might feel in life, you have to envision for yourself a window. What does that window look like? I heard a great line this week that in many situations, people respond by saying, no, because. Right? Can you change? No, because... I was going to say, not my mother-in-law, but you know, in the classic example, that's what you would say, right? No, because of my friend. No, because of my job. No, because of my finances, right? You have to change that too. Yes, if. Change from no, because, which is excuses, to yes, if. Like, yes, I could do this if I make the following things happen. Yes, I can get healthy if I start dieting, I start exercising. So instead of no because, no, I'm always going to have heart problems and health problems, whatever, because my wife makes this and my, you know, this and this and this. No, no, change to yes, if. Yes, if the following things happen. And then you know what needs to happen for you to change. You have an outline. You have an image of what that process is going to look like. That's the window that he's talking about here. Whenever you feel stuck, you have to picture what that if looks like, what that window looks like, what that opportunity for change is going to entail. He writes, that's why, in the next paragraph, he says, nowadays, we have exit signs, right, in every building. So we know, by code, fire code, you need exit signs. He says, every time you look at an exit sign, I want you to think to yourself that the same way this business, this building has an exit sign, so too, whatever situation I find myself in life, there's an exit sign. There's always a path. There's always an opportunity to change. There's always a moment of not just no because, but of yes, if. And that yes, if is that exit door. It's that window. And so idea number one, he says, is the window. And therefore he says, if you turn the page, that's why when Yosef was faced with the Nisayon, with the test of Eshes Potiphar, where does she see Yaakov? She sees the imagery of Yaakov in a window. He says, why a window? She Yaakov heir lo liros es achalon. Yaakov shows him a window to show him that you don't have to do this. There's always an option B. There's always an alternative. And that's why Yaakov specifically appears in a window of such a beautiful first insight. So that's the window. What about the rope? What does the rope represent? So he says, sometimes when a person makes a mistake, or sometimes when a person sins, so they feel like they have yeish. I made this mistake. I committed this sin. Hashem wants nothing to do with me anymore. Hashem has severed his relationship with me. He says that is the most dangerous attitude and mindset in all of Judaism. Rather, no matter how far you've fallen, you always have to envision that there is a rope that's connecting you to Hashem. Now, sometimes a rope can be short. And sometimes a rope can be long. But as long as you're connected to that rope, you always have a path back. And he says that's the imagery of the rope. If you look on the left-hand side, he says, Kach kol neshama Yisraelis. Every neshama has to feel. Kama shenizracha v'nidchasa. No matter how far you've fallen, or no matter how far you feel pushed away, you have to envision that you're always holding on to the rope. You may have made mistakes. You may feel disengaged. You may feel disillusioned. You may feel a lot of things. But you always have to feel that no matter how long that rope is, you're still holding on to the rope. And he says, Deha remez kan lahoros darchi atshuva. Rachav is teaching us the pathway of tshuva. V'toridein bechevel. The reason why there's a rope is lehizbonein v'ladas de'eich uve'eze matzav shu nosek ha'kesher me'adon kol neshamas. The worst thing you can do is cut the rope. As long as you're holding on to the rope, there's always a path to return. And so the window and the rope represent the pathway to tshuva. One is to always feel like you have that exit. Always feel that it's not no because, but it's yes if. That I always have another path, I just have to be willing to go out that window. And number two is no matter what mistakes you've made, and no matter what sins you may have committed, and no matter how distant you feel, and disengaged and disillusioned, you're always holding on to that rope. What a beautiful, beautiful imagery of the window and the rope. And I promise you, every time you see an exit sign in the building going forward, you're going to be sitting there in Shul on Shabbos, and your mind's going to be wandering, and you're going to think about all the things in your life you feel stuck about, and you're going to see the exit sign right by Rabbi Goldberg's door, and you're going to say, if that is an exit, then I can exit my problem as well. Then there's always a yes, if. And you just got to figure out how to make it happen. So we saw three ideas, and we went 32 minutes. Idea number one was the beautiful idea from Yaakov Moshe Charlap and others about Eretz Yisrael. Urisim es aretz mahi. To not just look at the superficial land, but to recognize the Kedusha that's underneath it. Idea number two came from Yaakov Kamenetsky, which is the power of community. The power of community. That we're not just a group of individuals who happen to be in the same room together, but rather, when individuals come together with common purpose and a common goal, you transform yourself from a person to people, from an ish to anashin, representing that you have formed now a new identity categorically. And idea number three was this beautiful idea. I don't know, I like this one a lot. Of the Mesilas Bilvavam, of Binyamin Eisenberger, why the window and the rope? Each representing a pathway to tshuva, always recognizing that you're never stuck, but you always have a window that you can go through, always recognizing that no matter how far you've fallen, if you're still holding on to the rope, you can always claw your way back. And with that, I wish everyone a good Shabbos.